Have you ever heard of bunny chow? Or cook sisters? Babuiti? Chicken tikka? These are all dishes that shaped my world as a child, just because of migration. Come with me, Erica von Kaschke, as we pass the cinnamon stick to people who have come to Australia. Listen to their migration stories, to what they bring to the land down under, and what they get from it.
Welcome to the Cinnamon Stick. It is my great pleasure to be speaking to Mohammed. Mohammed, I heard you just say your real full name, and I think it sounds amazing. So let me just give the mic to you, and you can just tell everybody what's your name.
Thank you, Erica. My full name is Mohammed Abdel Jabbar Kaadhim Sabih. This is my full name. Thank you, Erica.
I just love the sound of Arabic. You know, there's this tone, the way, like even when people say inshallah, they just say it in such a beautiful way that I think if unless your ear is tuned into it, you can't really say it right.
Yes, there is a lot of phrasing is very, very well known here in Australia, like inshallah, mashallah. But I think not just the Arabic audio is very nice to hear, but also the Australian voice is very nice to hear.
Mohammed,
yes.
Tell us, where did you grow up?
You see, I born in Iraq, in the capital city of Iraq, it's Baghdad. My house was situated close to the river, and then I spent most of my childhood there with my family. We couldn't move from Baghdad till I came to Australia.
It must have been amazing to live there, especially through all the things that have changed in Iraq since your childhood.
You see, we can see now the Iraqi people suffering from the confusion that's come to Iraq after the war. But I hope everything will be calm. I hope Iraq will be returned to the same point of the school and the safety country. But you see, we see, inshallah, everything will be all right in the future.
I know that that part of the Middle East is such an ancient culture. You know, there's so much rich history in Iraq. Tell me, what is the one thing that you grew up with that you go, wow, that is an amazing thing that you think the world needs to know about Iraqi culture?
You see, Iraqi people, they count themselves as a source of illumination, of revolution, because we came from the Sumerian area and Babylon area. That means the first letter was written in our country, and the music instruments discovered in our country. Sumerian,
yeah.
It's very famous,
yeah.
Civilization. Now all the Iraqis, when we are talking about our nations and the civilization, they feel they are very proud. But what we can do, they want to destroy everything. They want to destroy the history. They want to destroy the economy. They want to kill the person, the Iraqi person.
Yeah.
We faced many troubles right now in our country. But as I said, if we have ability, we can change. We can stay against this yellow wind that's coming to our country.
Tell me one of the stories of growing up in Baghdad.
You see, I have a lot of story. Let us kick all the bad stories ahead, and then I will tell you about something in my childhood. I remember one day, before I was born, my dad brought a precious vase from Russia, okay?
Yeah.
One day I was playing, when I was between 7 and 8 years old, I was playing with my toys. Immediately, I hit this precious vase. It fell down and it broke. Immediately, my dad came and he was shouting loudly, "Why did you that? It's very precious. It's aged more than 25 years. Well, immediately, my mom came to support me. She said, "What happened?" He told her the story. She said, "Oh, I'm very lucky. Muhammad did a good things for me because I don't like this vase. I tried just to broke it before, but Muhammad, he took my rule and then he did that for me. I remember that story. And then and that time my dad was laughing because always moms do the same rules for their children.
Exactly. And also, you know, like I think in Australia, people kind of like, if the wife doesn't like something, it has to go into the man's shed. I've done that before, even with my husband. Oh, no, maybe that will look good in your shed if you don't like that. Then, Muhammad, you actually had quite a great career in Iraq. Tell me a bit more about that.
You see, I'm already a professor at Baghdad University. I came with my wife here just to finish her study to get a PhD from Marduk University. That's mean I spent most of my life just in teaching and in media, and I'm always working as editor and cameraman, and then I was working as a reporter in Iraq Satellite Channel. I remember one day when I was in my work in television to make a report about something in the marsh, there was another satellite crew come to the same area. But can you imagine what was the subject? The subject wasn't the marsh. The subject we discovered that the subject was our crew.
Were you that famous?
Yes. And then after that, they told us we will catch you now. We follow you. We want to see what are you going to do here, and then we will put a part of our documents about the media. How can the media discover the marsh? Because you see, the marsh is it's a miracle place. It's a very fantastic place. You can't imagine.
Yeah.
Also, if you see the marsh on YouTube, and then you will visit it by you, as a reality, you will mention how much the difference.
Yeah.
Yes. My advice for everyone not right now, to visit this place. It's a miracle place.
Okay.
Yes. I want everyone just to see the marshes there. And the tribes there, they are very, very kind. And then they are very lovely people. They can help you, they can take you, but their thoughts, just you will see a places you will never see it again in your life.
Unbelievable. Yes. Yes.
And my when I was at university, you see, I used to spend my times between the library and the lectures and the teachings. There is a lot of story about my students because you see, I like the sense of humor of the students. Also, one day I remember I was very dizzy, and you see, because the time of exam, everybody was busy to put the number for the students. One day, there's a student come to me. He said, "Teacher, there's something wrong in my ranking." He told him what was. He said, "You gave me 60. I told him, "What's happening?" He said, "I deceived 30.
So tell me, when you, when that film crew, when they were reporting on you, did it feel strange, or like how did it feel being reported on?
Can you imagine, when you be sick, of course you will go to the doctor, and the doctor will be, "Don't do like that. Take this medication." But if the doctor will be sick, who will be more worse than patients?
Absolutely. Yeah,
because he will start to ask the doctor, "What's happened to me? Did you feel I have this kind of ill? What you suggest? Give me this. I don't prefer that."
Yeah.
Here it will be complicated case.
Yeah.
Yes. When I face the camera, really, I feel that I face camera for the first time.
Were you in Iraq, you know, when Saddam Hussein fell? Did you have to cover the media at that time?
At that time, I was working with Eurovision News Broadcasting.
Okay.
Yes. That means I was working with the Italian and British, Russian, Germany crew. Because our office can cover all these events with them. Because we have satellite channels.
Yeah.
Just to send their reports to their station, to their country. I was living on the hotel, at that time. And I saw the statue when it was lying down. I can't imagine what's happened to my feeling. I couldn't believe that.
Yeah.
Because 35 years of this kind of regime mean no hope to change. And then I saw everything changed in front of me.
In the blink of an eye.
Yes. I think there is a joke. I was working with the Italian, with TG1 and TG2 and TG3. There is a very famous correspondent who's alive to cover this kind of events when the statue lay down. She said, I'm here before the American come. I'm here before the statue fell down. I'm here before the demonstration start. And then I'm here before. And then there is another correspondent come to tell me. He said, maybe I said, I'm here before Sumerian.
Then when your wife came to do her PhD here, was that, did you come and you stayed? Was that, didn't, or what year was that?
You see, you have a lot of questions. Can I leave one?
Yes.
We try to stay.
Okay.
Yes. We try to stay because you see, here when I came to Australia, I came to paradise. I was in bad mood when I was in Iraq.
Okay.
And then I was planning just to jump to Australia. And then, believe me, the first step that I put my step on the Australian, really, I smelled something different. I was breathing deeply, deeply breathe.
Oh, wow.
And then I told my family, we are alive.
There's hope here.
Yes, because you see, I faced a lot of troubles before I came. They threaten me. They try to assassinate me. Yes.
Yeah.
They tried many times, but there is no way. God protects us. And you see, now I want to protect my family. I feel, you see, can you imagine when you drive in Baghdad in that time when I was there, you feel there is something will happen to you immediately. Suicide bomb, silent women, rockets, a lot of things. Except,
anything.
Yes. Except the stabbing. Or maybe one come to stab you by knife. And you don't know who's your enemy. Because if you write down something in Facebook, you will be enemy for someone. And then I was working in media, and you can imagine what's happening. I was working in media. I'm professor at Academy of Fine Arts. And and television movie departments. And you see, I love the song. I'm not complicated. And you can imagine. By the way, I was acting. I have a lot of series in the YouTube.
Have to.
But you can't recognize me because I was slimmer than you. Now my weight is 100 something.
It's a good country. Yes. Lots of good food. Yes.
But you see, something I put it in my mind before I came here. I told myself when I came to Australia, I will lose my weight.
What has been the biggest challenge for you coming to Australia? Because it sounds as if, you know, you had that sense of hope. There were lots of great things about this country, but what was one thing that you had to overcome while you're here?
If you mean challenge to live here, there is no challenge. The people here is very lovely, helpful. They want to help us, smiling, not complicated. They can show you. They can understand you, they can help you in everything. That means there is no challenge. We thought, you see, when I came here to Australia, I was speak English better than my family.
Okay.
Okay. Now my son speak better than me, except my daughter not speak better than me. But here, you see, here they used to advise us, you can visit this community, they will help you. There is English, free English courses, you see. When I go to the shop the first time, I thought, the sailor, brothers to me, not friends to me. Yes, they lend a hand, you see. The other challenge that you are talking about, how can you came to Australia? It's a big challenge. Book, just to explain what was the challenge.
Yeah.
Yes.
And definitely, if you want to come here, what I found challenging was, you know, filling in all the forms. Like, English is still my second language, but I grew up with it for a long time. So if English is not even, you know, is a second language, but you didn't speak it that often, all that emotional trial of filling in the forms is a challenge in itself.
Yes, exactly. Now, if anyone asks me, what about your English? My listening is perfect, but I feel there is a lot of problem in my talking. I have a lot of mistakes in grammar, and you see the phonetics, the accents, you see. But I understand absolutely perfect. Sometimes they can repeat the sentence for me when I ask him, oh, pardon, what do you say? Say it again.
Yeah.
They will repeat the sentence with a different way, just to make me understand. This is a good thing or bad thing? Of course, it's a medical thing. Here you see, in Australia, I prefer to talk to old better than the youngs, because most of the youngs busy with their job. But the old, when I talk to, they can show me everything.
How did you get in touch with Multicultural Futures?
This is the gate of paradise. Okay. Yes, because they show me the mercy of God.
Absolutely.
This is the main point. And you can imagine.
Yeah.
Was the power of the God.
I always ask these final two questions to everyone I interview. My second last question is, which word in your language did you bring with you to help you feel more at home in Australia?
Allah wafqak.
Why do you choose that one?
Because it's kind of prayer. I like to say for everyone that he helped me or he smiled in front of me or he...
Yeah.
It's kind of prayer. As the candle on the church.
Oh, that's
good. Yes, as the candle of the on the church.
That's fantastic. And so which Australian word or phrase did you adopt?
I like no worries. I can hear this words every time. When I give help, when I did mistake, when I harm one by accidentally, they said no worries. And I like...
It is kind of like a phrase of mercy, that if you come from a country where things are a bit tough and there's lots of upheaval,
yes.
If somebody even just says to you, no worries...
Yes.
You kind of, it just soothes you. Just go, okay.
Yes.
It's okay, I'm safe.
Yes. No, as example, yesterday, when I was just pulled my trolley and then I hit a person on the supermarket. Sorry about that. He said, no worries. Everything's going well. I was heavy because I thought I harmed him. It's very nice. Awesome. I like awesome.
Well, we'll definitely add those to our collection. So thank you so much, Mohammed. It was such a pleasure to speak to you. And all the best to you and your family.
Thank you, Arike. Thank you about everything.